And now for reading and writing and radio.
I had a rabbit skin. I told a little girl that it was the Easter Bunny. The little girl started weeping loud, so I had to tell her it was just a rabbit skin that didn't belong to any rabbit in particular, and then she stopped crying.
The person who told that dastardly lie and wrote it down is Waylon from Anita Daly's 4th grade Memorial School, Taylorville. But have you ever pulled someone's leg?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Pulling your leg. That's an odd expression, isn't it? What does it mean and where does it come from? It's an expression that I've heard and used all my life, but I didn't know, and so I found a very useful book in the library called A Dictionary of Word and Phrase Origins by William and Mary Morris. And under the phrase, pulling your leg, it says this. When you pull a person's leg, you are spoofing or making fun of him, usually in a good-humored way. But that wasn't always the meaning of the expression. When it first turned up in Scotland about 100 years ago, it was lacking the light-hearted touch it has today. In those days, to pull one's leg meant to make a fool of him, often by outright cheating. The best theory of the origin of the phrase is that by tripping a person, pulling his leg, you can throw him into a state of confusion and make him look very foolish indeed. Well, today we're going to talk about pulling your leg. And originally this was going to be featuring some of Mr. Girardi's class down at Litchfield from last spring. But alas, the tape that we made then was damaged, and I can't use it. And furthermore, Mr. Girardi's class isn't listening. He's been transferred to science and math from language arts, and so we don't have anybody from Madison Park School that we know of that is listening in. So I asked some of Anita Daly's class when I was in Taylorville recently, and some of my Sangamon State students and some of my family, for when they had their legs pulled, or when they pulled somebody's leg, and here is the result. Here's another one from Mrs. Daly's class. It's Mandy Hill, and she says, once I went up to my cousin, and I had a bunch of cotton balls that I had glued together, and I said, I ripped these off Santa Claus's beard, and she ran upstairs screaming, saying, Dad, Mandy pulled off Santa Claus's beard. And I imagine that Mandy had to confess that she was only pulling her sister's leg. It was your cousin, wasn't it? Here's one from Stacy Resitar. When my sister's tooth was loose, I told her, if you go to bed 3 hours early, you will get $3 extra. So she went to bed 3 hours early. And when she woke up the next morning, she had only 50 cents under her pillow. And I bet that sister wasn't too happy with that situation. From my own class, here's a story by Jan Johnston. She says, in the early 50s, my dad decided to teach my mom a lesson for gossiping too much. He often said that my mother believed everything she read, then repeated it to everybody she knew. So one weekend, when my dad and I went shopping for groceries, he picked up a copy of a humorous, phony newspaper called The Cockeyed Confidential. Now, Jan was a little girl at this time, I gather. On the cover, the headlines read something like this: Debbie Reynolds discovers fiancé Eddie Fisher to be her brother. A whole story with pictures was spread all over the front page. Now, Janny, my father said to me, I'm going to play a trick on your mother, so you just play along. Then he bought the funny newspaper and tore off the word cockeyed so that the heading just read confidential. We took the newspaper home with the groceries. As soon as my mother saw the story, she gasped. Then she called our neighbor and spent the rest of the afternoon telling people what had happened to Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher. I remember hearing her talk about what a shock it must have been to both of them to learn of their real identities. My dad and I were snickering all day. Finally, after about 2 days, people were even coming by the house to look at the newspaper. At that point, I was beginning to feel sorry for my mother, and I felt she should have caught on by now that it was a phony newspaper, but she never did. Dad finally told her the truth, and she wouldn't speak to him for a week. You see, it's not pleasant to be made a fool of, and even though pulling your leg is considered lighthearted, it often isn't that funny for the person, at least at the time. And sometimes it isn't ever really funny. But let's go on with some more lighthearted ones. Here's one where, well, I'll tell you how the person felt about it when we get to the end. The person that wrote this story is named Marilyn Hammond. She said, Natalie worked in our office and she hated flowers. She thought them pretty, but she hated anything she had to take care of. Natalie was nearly 70 years old and lived alone. We co-workers were her family, and she had to be on death's door before she would miss a day of work. We all loved her dearly, considering her our resident grandmother and mentor. She loved to laugh and joke and always looked for the funny side to life. The Christmas her brother in Florida sent her that amaryllis bulb proved to be one of the funniest holidays we ever shared with her. Now, an amaryllis is a plant that grows from its bulb very fast and very skinny and very tall and ends up with a big, beautiful, colored bloom on top. At first, Natalie grumbled, But as the days passed and the plant grew, she took great delight in watching for the day when it would bloom. We all watched the plant's progress with her. It was Tom who came up with the idea to tease Natalie. He went to the florist one morning and purchased two amaryllis plants, one 3 inches tall and the other already 6 inches tall. He made sure that the pots were the same color as the 15-inch plant on Natalie's desk. All during that day, he gave her information on amaryllis plants. He said he'd gotten this information from a florist. He said that the amaryllis was filled with air, cautioning her not to bump the plant because all the air would rush out and the plant would shrink. Everyone shared the joke but Natalie. Tom waited until she was at lunch to switch the 15-inch plant with the 3-inch one. When she returned to her desk, she glanced at the pot and let out a shriek, wanting to know who had accidentally bumped her desk and caused the amaryllis to collapse. We calmed her down and assured her that if she left it alone, the air would gradually seep back into the stems and the plant would return to its former height. About an hour later, Tom had a chance to switch plants again, this time with the 6-inch pot. Natalie was excited to see that it was growing again. Eventually, Tom replaced the original 15-inch potted plant on Natalie's desk, and she was overjoyed. But I'll never forget the look on her face when Tom came and placed the other two amaryllises beside the one from Florida. We laughed so hard we cried, and Natalie laughed hardest of all. She retold that story every chance she had until the day she retired. As for the plants, all three of them bloomed the weekend before Christmas. This story reminded me of my grandpa and Mr. Johnson and the corn plant. I grew up on a dairy farm, and we planted lots of corn. And we also bought milk from surrounding farmers, in addition to the milk from our own cows that we bottled up and sold in town. Well, Mr. Johnson lived on a farm some ways away, and when he would finish his milking in the morning, he would drive it over in the milk cans to be added to our milk and bottled and sent out. He was one of what we called our patrons. Well, it was spring, and he had a manure pile out in his barnyard, and the manure pile was right at a corner of the barnyard of the barn and the silo, where the sun hit it full blast, where it was sheltered, where it was warm. And in that manure pile, there must have been a grain of corn, a kernel of corn, and that kernel of corn had started growing way, way early. And so it was a foot or so high, this corn plant. Yeah, I'd guess at least a foot high. And so he took a shovel, and he put the corn plant out of the manure pile into a bucket, and he put it in his truck, and he drove it over to the farm when he brought his milk. And after he delivered his milk, he called to my grandpa, and he said, "I just want to show you how my corn is doing." Well, Grandpa took one look at that corn plant that was already standing a foot high, and he called to everybody else that was working on the farm, and he says, "Come quick, come quick, come see what Mr. Johnson's corn is doing." He said, "We don't even have ours planted yet. Everybody better get busy, and let's get our corn in." And Mr. Johnson told me that joke when he was actually in the hospital as quite an old man, of the time that he had pulled my grandpa's leg. Well, we have another one here from Andrea Tibbs. It's another farm one. She's in my class, and she says, "When I was in college, I had a roommate named Mary who was from a Chicago suburb. She knew very little about downstate Illinois and farming. I brought her home with me one weekend and introduced her to some friends of mine who lived on farms. She asked what we did for fun. One guy said that one thing that we did for fun around our town was to go out cow tipping. She didn't believe us, of course. All of us agreed with the one who told her about it, and we all proceeded to explain how it was done. Since we stuck together with our stories, she began to believe us and started asking questions about it. You had to wait until the cows were asleep out in the pasture. Cows, we said, sleep standing up. Then you sneak up on them and tip them over. After that, you run like crazy. We had her convinced, and she wanted to try it. It wasn't until several days later that she learned how gullible she'd been. Fortunately, she was a good sport and didn't mind, as long as it was all in the pursuit of a good time." So they didn't go cow tipping. We have a story here about my sister that I remembered as I was thinking about this topic. Now, when I was born, I had on my back a small growth, nothing that was going to hurt anything, nothing important, but it was a small growth, and it was down toward the bottom of my back, down toward the base of my spine, and my family, my parents, decided that it would probably be better if I had it taken off. So when I was about 5 years old, I went to the hospital, and they removed this little growth, and they sewed it up so that there was a scar down close to the tip of my spine, and that was that. Until along around second grade or so, I began discovering kids coming up to me and wanting to see my scar. It turned out that my older sister had told everybody that I was born with a tail, and that I had had that tail removed before I had started school. And you know, it was years. It was up into junior high school and high school before kids forgot about that and quit coming to me to say, "Hey, would you let me see your scar where your tail was?" My sister, well, I guess maybe I should tell you a little more about my sister, because she always was the sort of person that pulled other people's legs. And of course, the kind of person whose leg you can pull the best is somebody who is gullible. That means who believes you, who doesn't doubt you, who isn't immediately suspicious and says, "Oh, that can't be true," or, "Oh, you're pulling my leg." Well, when my sister Patty was in college, she had a roommate named Doris, who was very gullible. And Patty would pull all sorts of little things on Doris. For instance, "And you know, They weren't always very nice. I hate to admit this about my sister, but they weren't always very nice. For instance, she would get up before Doris, and for a while she took to wetting Doris's toothbrush. And after a while, Doris began to wonder, and she said, "Patty," she said, "do you know how my toothbrush is so wet that it doesn't dry out in the night?" And Patty said, "Oh, yes," she says, "well, I've been using your toothbrush. I left mine up at home, and so I've been using your toothbrush." And Doris was a nice girl and didn't want to hurt Patty's feelings. And she said, "Well," she said, "if you don't have a toothbrush, Patty," she said, "I'd be very glad to buy you one." "Oh, no, no," says Patty, "you don't need to go to that expense and trouble. I'll just keep on using yours until I go back home and can fetch my own again." And I think that probably when Doris insisted on buying her own toothbrush, why, Patty confessed that she had just been wetting Doris's toothbrush and had been pulling her leg. And I think probably Doris laughed at that one. Another story about Doris was the story about the Jergens lotion. Now, Jergens lotion is a hand lotion. Do we still have Jergens lotion, Kurt? Do you know? Yeah. Kurt's my engineer, and he's sitting here grinning at these stories. Jergens lotion is a hand lotion that you rub on your hands to make your skin soft when it gets chapped. And Patty was living in the dormitory, and they were eating in the dormitory big dining hall. And she carried down a bottle of Jergens lotion, and they all sat at various tables, four or five at a table, and they had salads, and there were various salad dressings to put on the salad. And Patty took the bottle of Jergens lotion, and she shook some of it out onto her salad. And it looked very much like salad dressing, and she took a bite of lettuce, careful not to eat the Jergens lotion, but it looked like she was eating the Jergens lotion. And Doris looked at her, and she said, "Patty?" She said, "Are you eating Jergens lotion?" And Patty said, "Yes." She said, "Haven't you ever had Jergens lotion on salad?" She said, "It's really good. It's awfully good." And then she looked over to the kids at the next table, and she said, "Haven't you people had Jergens lotion on your salads?" And they all turned around and said, "Oh, do you have some Jergens lotion? I haven't had any Jergens lotion on my salad since I left home. Here, pass it over." So she passed the Jergens lotion over to the next table, and everybody shook Jergens lotion onto their salads and pretended to eat it and so forth. And, well, after a little bit, Doris said, "Well, maybe I'll try some." So she took the Jergens lotion, and she shook it onto her salad, and she took up a little piece of lettuce with it, and she put it into her mouth. And, of course, by then, half the dining room was watching Doris eat the Jergens lotion. And she chewed it and chewed it, and then her face lit up, and she said, "Why, it's good!" So I don't know when they told her that you don't really eat Jergens lotion, and I don't imagine there was anything in there that would really have harmed her, or at least one or two bites of it. But you see, that was the sort of girl my sister was and actually still is. She still does pull people's legs. Gosh, I'm running out of time and I still haven't told all my stories. I'll tell you one quick about her daughter, who has inherited, I'm sure, her own tendencies. My mother was blind toward the end of her life, and when we would visit up in New Brunswick in the summertime and the grandchildren were visiting, why, people would take turns reading to her. And my niece, Jackie Jo, who was maybe 21 or 22, was reading her a story that Jackie Jo found very, very boring. And so what she'd do would be to spice it up. She would add all sorts of things, extravagant paragraphs of things that never could have happened to that hero or to that heroine. And Mother listened and listened, and it was quite a few chapters before she finally said, "I can't believe that all that is going on in that story." And then, of course, the story came out that Jackie Jo had been making up half of the story as she went along because she was bored with the actual story that she was reading to my mother. Well, I could tell you many more stories about pulling legs, but I've got one final one here that's pretty gross, actually. And so you teachers, if you don't want to hear a gross story, why, you put your fingers in your ears. But kids, I think you'll like this one. It's written by Suzanne Gubank in my class, and it's about her dad. She says, "My father has always been one to laugh. He is quick with a smile and a joke, ready to enjoy life. He loves kids. I have yet to see my father enter a room standing up when he knows a child may be crawling about on the floor. He gets right down there with them. He is actually a kid himself, enjoying the innocence and gullibility of a child's imagination. My mother used to say, "Someone's going to get hurt if you all start wrestling on the floor like that." She was right, and it was usually my dad. He had his nose broken by my 2-year-old brother. My father was sleeping on the living room floor, and Riley waddled up and clubbed him with a toy. My dad laughed. He had 6 stitches sewed in his leg from playing high jump in the backyard with us. This leads me to one of his best pranks ever. One Christmas, when I was about 12, my little sister Carol, as always, wanted a new doll. She wanted one that could drink from a bottle and wet its pants. She got her wish and was overjoyed. She spent all morning long pouring water into that little dolly's mouth, waiting 10 minutes and changing wet diapies. My father told her that she was going to drown the kid if she didn't take it easy with her feeding schedule and that the baby would get sick. Finally, when she left the room for a minute, my father picked up the dolly and, giggling to himself, he went sneaking into the kitchen. He called the rest of us kids in and proceeded to melt 3 chocolate-covered peanuts in a pan. When they were sufficiently gooey, he opened up the doll's diaper and placed them inside. Be sure you got your fingers in your ears, those of you that don't want to hear a gross story. Off he went to the living room with 3 pairs of beady eyes and excited feet behind him. We all sat down in front of the TV with the baby doll back in her cradle. "Carol, something stinks down here. I think your new baby is sick." She came clip-clopping from her room, clad in her high heels and my mom's dress. She loved to play mother. My dad was holding his nose. "Phew, something smells awful in here. You better check that diaper." She took the doll from the crib and laid her down on the living room rug. We all stared at the baby's bottom with anticipation. There was not a breath being taken. She unpinned the white, hanky-sized diaper and, "Oh, no, she is sick. Look," as she held up the brown evidence. My father was not one to leave well enough alone. He proceeded to walk over, smell the concoction, and say, "Aw, that's not so bad," and put a fingerful in his mouth. Then all 4 kids were screaming, "Gross!" So there are some pulling-your-leg stories. Some of them can be cruel, and I have some of those I could tell you, but I won't today. I'll keep it lighthearted, or sort of lighthearted. But you can tell whatever story you like, when you were the one that was pulling somebody else's leg or when you were the one whose leg was being pulled. Give us all the details. Tell us whether you laughed along with the others, whether you cried, whether if you were the one that did it, you felt sorry afterwards or knew that you'd been mean. Whatever the story is, tell us about pulling your leg.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.